It's kickoff. It's kickoff. It's time for some football. It's kickoff. It's kickoff. It's time to see who can walk the walk and not just talk the talk. Let me hear you yell. It's the NFL. It's kickoff.
Welcome to a special Super Bowl edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. I'm Kevin Fishbane, joined by Arthur Arkish. Got our producers on hand, Dan Mott and John Solly. And we took a last week off. Arthur and I were in beautiful Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl, but we're all Super Bowl today on this show. We're going to talk about the matchup. We'll break it down, Panthers versus Broncos, talk a little Chicago connections. But the main part of the show, really why you're all here, we're going to talk Super Bowl prop bets and get into some of those fun prop bets, and we'll give you our game picks at the end of the show. Arthur, by the way, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at ShyFootball, at Bears_Insider. I am at K Fishbane. He's at Arthur Arkish. Hub Arkish is on assignment at the Super Bowl in San Francisco / Santa Clara / San Jose. I was saying somebody be like calling it the Chicago Super Bowl if the game was being played in Rockford. The way I understand how it works, but I just think it's kind of funny. Go ahead and subscribe to the Chicago Football Podcast on Twitter. Not a lot of Bear stuff to go through, Arthur. We'll talk a little bit about the offseason at the end of the show, but I want to talk about John Fox. Foxy. Because I can't get enough of the fact that these are his two former teams playing against each other. He was the last coach of the Panthers, and he was the last coach of the Broncos, and here they are in the Super Bowl.
It's interesting, to say the least. More than coincidence, I think it shows that Fox is capable of being a franchise builder, kind of a turner arounder. But we also remember what happened the one time Fox did make an appearance in the Super Bowl. It wasn't pretty. So the belief by many when he was hired here is that he could be just that, the guy that kind of took you to the mountaintop. But there were some reservations regarding his ability to kind of scale it and get, you know, over the mountaintop, if you will.
Well, they didn't get crushed in 2003, though. The Carolina Panthers.
Thank you, Kevin. I said he had only been in the Super Bowl once. That's absolutely incorrect. That's my fact checker, Mr. Fishbane here. And you're right. That was actually, they almost pulled off one of the great upsets in the Super Bowl. So I apologize to John Fox, and I'm sure he's listening and won't accept my apology.
No, he won't. I'm curious if he's gonna who he's cheering for. Who do you think he's cheering for? I actually, that's a stupid question. He's obviously cheering for the Panthers.
Yeah, but I mean,
there's no love lost there between John Elway and John Fox.
And I wouldn't disagree. And I guess because it's even further removed, and whomever fired John Fox when he was still in Charlotte, Jerry Richardson's there, of course, but they've had some major turnover in the front office. So, I would have to agree. Although no one likes to get fired, I'm sure this is going to be kind of an awkward couple hours for him overall come Sunday.
And John Elway made comments this week. They were in the Chicago Sun-Times. Friend of the program, Mark Potash, wrote it up. And he made a comment along the lines of, this is why we made the coaching move, because here we are, we've gotten past where we need to get past. And what happened in the Broncos last year, there were a lot of inside issues that we're not going to rehash. We know stuff didn't go right between Elway and Fox, and that's why they are. I thought it was a little bit of an unnecessary shot across the bow from Elway to Fox, because, I mean, honestly, you look at this year's Broncos team and how close they were to not being here at this time. And look, what Wade Phillips has done with that defense is fantastic. Gary Kubiak deserves a ton of credit. The way that offense has continued to just do enough to get by, the whole Osweiler Manning thing, I don't want to take any credit away from Kubiak and Wade Phillips. But to kind of say the reason we're here now is because Fox is gone, and this, you know, I don't think was that great of a team during the regular season playoffs, I think it's a little bit of a stretch, a little unnecessary of one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play.
Yeah, I do too. There's some interesting parallels between Fox and what he was able to do and tabbing someone like Adam Gase, obviously a head coach now. I realize Jack Del Rio is also a head coach, but I don't think many would argue that what Wade Phillips has done this year with the defense is more impressive than anything Jack Del Rio did with kind of similar star power. So, the biggest... skin on the wall of Gary Kubiak right now. John Fox will like that saying, I believe, was his ability, I believe, to navigate such treacherous waters with the whole Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler thing.
Unfortunately, John Fox has already turned off our podcast, so he missed that hat tip to one of his favorite sayings.
And I'll take the blame for that. But no, I just think it's hard to give Kubiak a ton of credit because just with regard to the performance of the offense, because it hasn't really hit its stride all season, and a lot of that's on Peyton Manning, but I think there's a little bit of stubbornness on both sides, or at least a little bit of hesitation in ability to get those systems molded between what he likes and what Manning prefers.
You guys saw the Denver Broncos in person this year. Did you think that was a Super Bowl team coming out of that win against the Bears? It was Osweiler's first start, I know that, but did you come away thinking, yeah, they're going to the Super Bowl?
No. Now, I will say this. There wasn't really a team in the AFC, minus the Patriots at times, that I thought that about. And let's remember, if the Bears had the right play on the two-point conversion, they probably would have taken that game to overtime. I know there's a lot of extra things going on because it was Osweiler's first start, but that was a team that came very close to losing to the Bears, the 6-10 Bears. So, no, I did not think that when I saw them. I have not thought that throughout. I think Carolina's favored, and we're going to get into the matchup by a lot, and they should be. But, you obviously the Broncos are here for a reason, too. I don't want to, and it's not. I'm not trying to be like John Fox's biggest defender here, but I think that it's a stretch to say that the reason they're there is because John Fox is not there. The interesting thing about Fox's time in Denver too, and I think Fox would say this: their best team was the one that lost to the Ravens. And you want to talk about fluke of all flukes in the playoffs? That Hail Mary, the misplay by Raheem Moore. They decided to take their chance and go to overtime and take a knee. That was maybe the best team, not the team that went to the Super Bowl. So there was certainly some unfinished business out there. But Arthur, hearing you talk about Fox in that way made me think about Tom Thibodeau a little bit, and I wonder if, look, if John Fox can do with the Bears what Thibodeau did with the Bulls, that would be a rousing success. If you get them to be perennial NFC contenders, just not really over the mountaintop, I think people would be pleased with that to a point, because Lovey, you could argue, was in a little bit below that realm. And, Lovey, obviously, we know what happened there.
It's an interesting comparison to Thibodeau. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but we've talked all season on this podcast about the ability to build up the culture, and I think we agree that that's kind of what is underway in Chicago. Now it's a matter of getting the talent. But just one more time, I would agree with you. And, when Elway said that, his reason for firing John Fox was that they didn't go down kicking and screaming, and obviously looking at the score, that's obvious. But it is an interesting kind of contrast to the way these Bears players talk about Fox and how they kind of want to go to war for him.
Poor John Elway had to take questions from Mark Potash out there. And Potsy's the bulldog when it comes to questions. I'm sure he had plenty of John Fox questions. All right, Arthur, let's break down this matchup between the Broncos and the Panthers. And I think the way that I've seen this matchup from the beginning is both defenses should have edges over the opposing offense. I just think that the Panthers' defense's edge against Peyton Manning and the Broncos is so much greater than that on the other side. That's what gives them the ultimate edge. I mean, look, Peyton Manning has done his job. Those two touchdown passes were some kind of vintage Peyton throws to Owen Daniels. You look at the way they've run the ball, the way they've protected him, and he hasn't thrown a pick. He's also only he's completed less than 60% of his throws, and you're going against a team that led the league in interception ratio, and everything they have up there with Kuechly and Kawan Short and Lotulelei and then Josh Norman in the secondary. It's hard for me to see, unless 2012 Peyton Manning walks out of that tunnel, how they're going to get into 17, 20, 24 points.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and at the same time, I haven't really done it all season, and it's probably been silly because he's looked like he's been buried on numerous occasions, but you look at the talent that the Broncos have, and like you said, you look at those couple touchdown throws, you look at how he's been getting better protection, and you just kind of, you wonder if maybe he does have a little bit of magic left. I don't know. It is going to be a much tougher defense.
Well, if he had magic left, I'll say this, getting the week off.
Absolutely, should help.
That's where I think you can have some confidence in Denver, is that he had this extra time, and that's where you could see maybe some of the vintage Peyton stuff come alive, at least early in the game.
I think good weather conditions, it's a great point by you, is another aspect that potentially can help Peyton. And then, no one else has been able to exploit it yet, but we've been talking about it for 3 weeks. Josh Norman is a stud. He's going to be the highest paid cornerback in a matter of months. the guys next to him were off the, on the street in December. Yeah. Cortland Finnegan and Robert McClain are absolutely beatable if you can find the time for Peyton and you can kind of exploit those matchups. We know no one's better than that.
And Emmanuel Sanders is a tough cover. He made some great catches against New England.
Absolutely, and you feel like Demaryius Thomas might kind of be the sleeping bear a little bit because he stunk so badly, but you know he's more talented than that. So, look, at the end of the day, it might be too simplistic, but you alluded to it. Carolina, the best at taking the football away this season. Peyton Manning, easily the interception leader in the NFL. That's
everybody
what it comes down to.
Everybody need to know about the Carolina blue.
They do.
Exactly right.
I like Carolina's colors. Kind of like that color scheme they got going over there. I kind of, these newer teams, the teal, the turquoise, you know, some of these expansion teams around sports, I kind of like that. I kind of dig it. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit younger, and that's why. I don't know.
But younger young. Relative to...
Younger than, first of all, everyone in this room right now.
Teed him up with that one.
But, you know, I kind of like that. But, okay, so I think then the other question then for you, Arthur, would be, the Broncos, I think their best chance to win is if C.J. Anderson runs the ball really well.
What about Ronnie Hillman? Does anyone seen him other than on the back of Bill Carton? No, I know, but that big playability, C.J. Anderson was joking about it on opening night. He doesn't have that extra gear to pull away. Obviously, Hillman does. So just, you know,
didn't C.J. Anderson, wasn't he the one that pulled away against the Patriots in overtime and that...
That's true.
Game winning touchdown? Selling himself short. A real Arthur Arkish over there in Denver. But the other thing, you mentioned those corners. One other thing I want to point about the Carolina defense, the defensive ends are not that great.
No Jared Allen love? No Mario at? No, you just hate the Bears?
Pretty much. I mean, Charles Johnson's making a ton of money. He hasn't done a ton.
But he's not.
Coney Ealy's had some flashes. You mentioned Addison. Jared Allen's going to play. I mean that they get their pressure from the middle too.
Absolutely.
So,
and fortunately,
but that's how you got to get after Peyton. You got to get after him up the middle because he's not going to be able to move laterally.
But fortunately for Denver, I think their best linemen are in the middle with Mathis and Vasquez. So maybe I don't think anyone can stop Short and Letutule right now. That's going to be a problem for Denver. But they've been a little bit more susceptible, I think, on the edges than up the middle of late.
Will they be rattled by Omaha? Rattles me every time.
I was going to say, who wouldn't be rattled by Omaha? Is there an over-under? I'm sure we'll get to that on number. That might even be played out at this point.
There's an over-under on how many times Dan Mott plays it during this podcast. It's at 7.5.
We've hit the over.
So, all right, other side of the ball now, Cam Newton and that Panthers offense against the best defense in the league. And look, Cam, 35 touchdowns, 10 picks in the regular season, 70% accuracy in the two playoff games. He's been sensational. His accuracy was not that good in the regular season. I mean, that's somebody that could throw the ball away, could throw an interception. That's what Denver needs, I think. They got to get some kind of edge early via that. But the way Carolina runs the ball, so creative with Mike Shula, I think that's how you attack Denver. You pound the ball until they stop you with Cam, with Tolbert, with Jonathan Stewart, whoever else they want to try it out there, and minimize the effect that Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris Jr., Bradley Roby, TJ Ward, that those pass defenders can have in this game and just run the ball and make them stop you.
Yeah, I agree. And you talk about all that Pro Bowl talent on the edges and you know, in the back end of the Denver defense. But it does make you think that, you know, we started to hear their names, Malik Jackson and the other dude, Wolf, a lot of late. And they're going to have to be the biggest difference makers here to first and foremost stop the run. And then just one more quick thought. Cam Newton has been tremendous in the postseason. Like you said, 70% completion percentage. It's not as hard when you're up by 20, 25 points. Someone needs to put the pressure on him and see if he'll flinch because that really hasn't been presented just yet.
And I think a common topic the past 2 weeks has been if they pressure him like they did Brady, he can get outside the pocket and make some plays with his legs, which is true, but that's also an easier said than done situation. That's where you can get the broken plays, extended plays. But we talked about some of Carolina's deficiencies in terms of players. Look, their receivers have played well this year. I mean, Ted Ginn's come out of nowhere to play like he did when he was in college, but that's not a group of receivers that really is going to intimidate another team. And Greg Olsen's the biggest weapon they have out there. That's where you attack Denver because those safeties are not necessarily good in coverage. You put them up against Brandon Marshall or Danny Trevathan. That's where you go after them. Also, Carolina's offensive line, they've done a fine job this year, but those are not blue chippers up front. So there are some ways that the Denver's defense, I mean, that's how they win this game. And I want to quickly turn this to something you and I have talked about off air, and I'm curious to get our producer's take on this as well. The whole idea of Peyton Manning walking out into the sunset with the Super Bowl, I think is it would be a nice story, don't get me wrong. And Peyton is, probably for me, maybe the best quarterback I've ever seen. Brett Favre, maybe, but the way Peyton manages the game and calls plays, picks apart the defense, so fun to watch. My issue with this whole narrative of being excited about Peyton getting that Super Bowl is, unless he's going to have that magic that you alluded to earlier, Arthur, it's not going to be because of Peyton. It's going to be because of the defense. It's going to be because of C.J. Anderson. It's going to be because he protects the football. And he'll be the number one person talked about, but just be kind of odd. I looked back at that John Elway Super Bowl, because you and I talked about this, the last Super Bowl, and he threw for more than 300 yards in that game. I mean, he was the MVP, I believe, in that game. It'll just be kind of, I don't know if it'll, you know, put a little damper on the fact that this is, you know, that he could go walk off into the sunset and throw for 123 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. I'm curious for your guys' take on the whole Peyton narrative, because I'm fine getting excited about a Broncos win for Peyton, but it'd be more fun if Peyton was playing like Peyton.
Yeah, I guess the question is, does he need this for his legacy or his
which I don't believe he does.
And he doesn't. Yeah. That's absolutely right. But if you give him what it will be, another championship game loss, another Super Bowl loss, how much does that hurt him in terms of, because we're talking about legacy at this point. That's all we're talking about. And like you said, if he throws 190 yards and a touchdown and a pick and they win and he's just sort of there, you know, does that help or hurt him? You know, whatever. He's still one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, still one of the top three quarterbacks of all time in my view. So, you know, it's a nice story. If it happens, great. But I don't need it. I don't really care to see it either way. I'm looking forward more to a good game in the matchup, and if he can survive that defense. But I'm not looking for 350 yards and four touchdowns out of Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I'm more afraid of you know, if he does go down, if he does get hurt. That might be just kind of sad to see.
Such a masochist over here.
Yeah, don't mean to get down, but I think that would be. I'm kind of with John that, you know, it doesn't really matter either way. But I think if he does get hurt and they have to cart him off the field, then you're like, poor Peyton Manning.
It would be wild if Brock Osweiler is the winning quarterback for the Super Bowl. I mean, that would really be something. Well, here's a question. Nah, this is not a stupid question. I know the answer. If Peyton has four interceptions at halftime,
what do you do?
And they're still in the game.
Oh gosh, I don't know.
So
how
you're
they
down
are.
By yeah, that's true. But let's say you're down 17-0. Peyton's thrown four picks, which is totally possible. We saw that Kansas City game earlier in the season. You can't bench him, right?
I think you can.
Yeah, it's the Super Bowl. You can.
I would, but that's why I'm not a football coach.
Yeah, I think you can. I think at that point you got to say might
be
no.
It might be a ridiculous hypothetical, but yeah. I don't know. The guy threw, what was it, 9 touchdowns to 17 picks during the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, if it's 17-0, you know, technically you're still in that game. Yeah. And you have an entire half, and you'd have to go to someone who can at least throw the ball, not to the other team.
All right, Arthur, talk to us about this Peyton Manning narrative.
I just kind of think that it would be only as a last resort, so maybe 17-0 wouldn't be quite as big of a blowout as Kubiak would need to be compelled to do that. But I don't know. Again, I think John made the ultimate point. If he's got four turnovers, it's going to be a lot worse than 17-0. So I don't know. I mean, Osweiler, you know, he showed flashes, obviously, but there was never any consistency. So you'd be banking on that 130 minutes of football on the biggest stage in the NFL, you know, kind of coaxing the best from him. And I'm not sure that's a winning proposition either. So I don't know. I think he is going to protect the football. My ultimate take is that it's going to be good, but not good enough. But I don't think he's going to come out there and stink it up, even as good as Carolina's defense has played of late.
I'll give you my X factor, red zone. I mean, the Panthers are so much better than Denver in the red zone, and points are going to come at a premium when you're talking Super Bowl, and I think that's where they get a really big edge if you're just looking at the numbers. It's what they do inside the 20. Very good at scoring touchdowns. This is all well and good, but let's talk Super Bowl prop bets, guys. Let's go through these. I got a big list here from Bovada. I'm going to go through some of my favorites, and we'll go around and get your take. All right. Will Peyton Manning be seen crying at any point during the broadcast? Yes is plus 600, 6 to 1. No would be minus 1,200.
Well, if he's going to throw four picks, I imagine he's going to be crying.
Or off on a stretcher, as Dan said, is a possibility. Yeah, perhaps. I'm trying to think. Have we seen Peyton cry at that Colts news conference where there's some tears?
Oh, that's a while ago.
Yeah.
I think there probably were. If he wins, I'm sure we're going to at least see some fake tears out of him, right?
Is that better or worse than Cam's fake smile?
Now, here's the other thing that these sports books got to figure out. What if somebody calls it that he's faking it?
Oh, I don't want to deal with that.
That's why you should never gamble. By the way, we should say, we are not promoting gambling. This is for fun.
I am. I'm promoting gambling.
Gambling does not take place around the NFL. How dare you? How many times will dab or dabbing be said by the announcers during the broadcast? The over-under is two. The over-under is at two.
And so it's Nance and Sims, right?
The question is...
Thanks for that reminder.
The question is, does the camera go to them dabbing? Will they be dabbing?
Is that like... Because Phil Sims could ask Jim if he knows how to dab, and then they'll go to the thing, and they'll both dab, and then you're already over.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be after Cam scores one touchdown and does it.
Yeah,
I think I'm taking the over on that.
I think you have to.
I think once they get rolling, you're looking at like at least 6 or 7 mentions.
Bovada needs Dan Mott's help, because the much more realistic prop bet would have been, will we actually see the analyst dab? It's going to be way over, too.
All right, so I heard Steph Curry on the radio this week, so they got to throw out this what will he be wearing on TV. He says he's wearing a personalized Keep Pounding Carolina Panthers shirt. Ooh, I like this one, though. Will Mike Carey be wrong about a challenge?
Yes.
Yes is plus 110. No is minus 150. Obviously, yes is the favorite. Here's a note. He must be consulted on the live broadcast and must clearly take a stance on the position.
If there's going to be any consult with Mike Carey, then the answer is yes. How often has he been correct in all the games
we've
watched?
He went off and defended himself. He had some stat that he tweeted a couple weeks ago of it, and it made it look like he's been better, and maybe we're just highlighting when he's been wrong. But
he also had a few spelling errors in that.
That's very true. See, this is where CBS should have two officials. They should get get Hockley. Get Hockley and Carey to debate some of these calls during the Super Bowl broadcast. I would really enjoy that.
Just what we need is more gray area on NFL officiating. Let's have a take two of sorts. That'll help.
How many times will the Golden Gate Bridge be shown during the broadcast? The over-under is 0.5. And let me reiterate what I said at the start of the show. It's 50 miles away from where the game is being played. Maybe somebody in CBS realizes that and makes that the under. But 0.5, you got to think it's up there once, right?
Yeah, at least.
I mean, the over is the big favorite here, minus 300.
Yeah, you got to go with it.
All right, we talked about this earlier. How many times will John Fox be said during the broadcast? The over-under is one. The under is an even odds.
I think I'm going to push on that.
You push?
I think he gets mentioned once.
You know what? I don't think he's been talked about. He's been talking about very little this week. That's why I wanted to talk about it on the podcast. But outside of the Sun-Times article, I've barely seen it out there.
I think that not only does he get mentioned once, but CBS does a graphic and shows us John Fox with Carolina and with Denver.
Here's something to consider. We're going to have a graphic on our
Saturday
morning television show, Chicago Football Now, which you should all have DVR'd and be watching 10:30 a.m. on WCIU, the U in Chicago. Dan Mott's got a graphic up about John Fox. Do they take your graphic?
No.
They might. You make good graphics.
Thank you.
Arthur, you going over or under on that?
I'm going to go under just because John Fox is pretty bland, and I don't know that they're going to want to really waste a lot of airtime on that.
Not moving the ratings needle for
not
you?
Not exactly.
Will the announcers mention that Kubiak was Elway's backup during the broadcast?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes is a slight favorite here. I should have led with this one. How many times will Elway be shown on TV during the broadcast? The over-under there is 2.5. I think that's a tough one, because it's so dependent on the flow of the game.
Yep.
If Carolina rolls, well, I shouldn't say that, because if they roll, they're going to talk a lot about Peyton's legacy.
If it's close,
but Carolina's in the lead, and Carolina wins, once Carolina wins, they're done with any Elway stuff. Mm-hmm. right? They move on.
No, you'll see him walking out of the box. They'll show that they'll have that shot of him walking out all flustered with his
going out kicking and screaming like he wants his players to do.
Yeah.
Which color will the liquid be that is poured on the winning coach? Here we go. Orange is 5-4, blue 3-1. So those are your top two. You know, the common colors of the Gatorade, and those are the colors of the team. Clear 4-1. I think clear is kind of an interesting one. What if it's just water? Yellow 4-1. Red 6-1. Purple, go Cats, 10-1. Any choices here?
I'm going orange.
Orange, okay.
I'm going blue. I think that gives me the
Well,
best.
If you think the Panthers are going to win, I think you have to go blue. Yeah. You have to kind of stack those bets.
Spoiler alert on my picks. I think Carolina's going to win this game. So.
John, now no one's going to listen to the end of the show.
Oh, we're done. Can we just wrap up?
My favorite Gatorade is actually the purple. I think it's fierce spice or whatever it
That's
is.
That's also my favorite. So. Great minds think drink Gatorade a lot. That's what they say. Who will the Super Bowl MVP mention first? God is 2-1. Team is 2-1. City fans 6-1, coach 15-2, family 15-1. Does not mention anyone above 9-4. I think Cam's a spiritual guy, and I don't see Peyton do it. I think if Peyton wins, it goes to City and fans.
I would agree with
that. Or maybe team.
I would go City and fans if it's Peyton. I think God if it's Cam. Man, then you're looking at. You know,
but if Brock Osweiler wins, it could be coach for putting him in the game. All right, let's go to the halftime show. Which song will Coldplay play first during the halftime show? Adventure of a Lifetime. I think that's their new one.
Yeah.
It's kind of like electronic dance to it. 2-1. Fix You is 7-2. A Sky Full of Stars, 9-2. Viva La Vida, which is one I like a lot, 5-1. Clocks, Old School, 15-2. Speed of Sound is decent, as I'm giving my Coldplay editorializing here, 9-1. Head Full of Dreams, 10-1. I thought Paradise would be on there as one.
It
just
was
like,
on.
Did you see
what
that?
I
you
saw
seen that
earlier. Paradise was 15-1.
Okay, yeah. I think it's a nice long shot because it's got a good beat to it. It's a happy song. You're talking about paradise here at the Super Bowl.
Does anybody remember what Katy Perry opened up with last year?
I think Roar is what she opened up with.
So I'm just trying to think of how old was that song?
There's some marketing, too, that they got to figure out.
Yeah.
Because Adventure Lifetime, I think there's a newest song. Do they want to open with that? Do they want to close with that?
I think they go in the middle with it. I like Paradise as a long shot odd on that.
Well, I think the other thing, too, with this, you know, in terms of closing and whatnot, you got the Beyonce factor. And Bruno Mars. So, you know, they're going to do the song they want to do themselves first, I would imagine. But who knows? Only Coldplay knows. What color will Beyonce's footwear be when she comes on stage for the halftime show? Black, gold, brown, white, silver, gray is 19-4. Any other color is 7-1.
I'm going black. She's going to keep it classy.
Gold.
Formal. Art Deluxe. I mean, gold is the...
it's the Super Bowl 50 colors.
That's true.
Black or gold is my pick there.
All right, so we got three more. One on the sheet, two off the sheet. This is John Solly's favorite. Will Left Shark make an appearance during Super Bowl? Is it during the halftime show?
It is during the halftime show.
So I have to be. Yeah. That's curious wording. Appearance on stage during the halftime show. It's 15-1.
You lay down $5, you're walking away with 75. And it's fun, and I want Left Shark to be part of the halftime show. Rooting for this.
Do they know who Left Shark is?
I think everybody knows who Left Shark is.
Will they want will they be into this?
I think they're whimsical enough.
Okay,
because
I don't know Chris Martin man to man.
I don't think Beyonce would want Left Shark on there. Is the problem? No. So Left Shark's got to be there early.
Gotta get out of the way.
You gotta get out of the way
when Queen Bey comes down. All right, so John, you told me the over-under national anthem is 220.
I believe that's right, 220. Yeah.
This is one of my favorite ones to do, and when I'm at a Super Bowl gathering, we'll do the stopwatch and we'll try to figure it out. It's Lady Gaga this year, and I think 220 is a little longer than usual. And with Gaga, I think you have to factor in for some weird stuff to go on during the national anthem. She could hold some notes for a while. She could throw in like a different national anthem. I mean, there's a lot of different ways.
Tony Bennett could come walking out halfway.
There you go, her pal Tony.
I didn't even consider Tony Bennett as a part of this.
220 is tough.
Over. I think it's going
that's
over.
That's a long national anthem, though.
It is.
I feel like the one thing you can't really mess around with a whole lot, though, even if you are Gaga, like there had to be some unwritten rule. You don't screw this up, Gaga. This is big time here.
Roger Goodell laying the hammer down.
Well, right, right. Yeah, I don't know. That seems like a long time.
I'm excited she is. She's got an awesome voice. Say what you think about her quirks, but she's got a great voice. 220. That's, if it was like 210, I think I would have gone over. I think it'll be in that 215 range. I'm going to go under.
I'm saying like 224.
Okay.
I think it goes over.
All the listeners of this podcast are going to have their stopwatches out. All right, last one. This is not on any board, but this is one my two close friends, Mark and Danny, do this every year. So I'll throw it to you guys. Every year they have a Talking Animals commercial over under. Okay? And it's generally been, sometimes there have been one, sometimes there have been like seven or eight. I'm told that they're tentatively setting the over-under. We're recording this on Wednesday. It's tentatively set at 5.5 for talking animals in commercial. And I believe
total animals or total animals?
The
right?
Talking, yeah. Okay. I don't know if it's, is
not
it talking animal
the commercials? Number of
commercials? Yeah, no. I think it might be talking animal commercials or talking animals. Either way, it's at 5.5.
I think I'm going to go the under. If you go to chicagofootball.com, we've got a couple of AP stories up about the Super Bowl ads, and they are, and this, they're going to be somber this year. Helen Mirren is going to lecture you on drunk driving.
Is what was the one last year that
the nationwide one
nationwide.
Last year? Man,
oh,
was that depressing?
That baby,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So they're going a little more serious. It looks like in the
I usually side with the under when they do this bet. The talking animals, because it's tough. And then they've been arguments over animated talking animals. Does that count?
Yeah, you got to set those parameters before.
So
the game
that's why I usually lean towards the under. They did. They did top 50 Super Bowl commercials of all time on CBS Tuesday night, and I was with my parents watching those Clydesdale commercials. My mother cries every time. So the number one was the one where the horse, the Clydesdale leaves the farm and joins the Budweiser thing, and the guy goes to see it in the parade 3 years later, and the horse comes running down the street. And they played it twice. Both times my mom is standing, like half weeping as she watched. I thought Mean Joe Green would still be number one, just for sentimentality, you know. It was in the top five. The Darth Vader was number two, though.
Oh, that
was a really funny
Vader
one.
Thing. That was good.
I think there was some definite recency bias in their rankings.
Was Terry Tate office linebacker in there?
No, I did not see that one, actually.
Loved those.
That was one of my favorites.
I'm not as excited for commercials as usual, because now I have not seen very many releases here early, but you can just go on BuzzFeed after the game. And if you want to go find your favorite commercial, it's there. So usually I would get annoyed when people would talk, like people who are not into the game but at the viewing would talk during the commercials. I'm thinking, this is, I assume you're here for the commercials, so let's be quiet during the commercials. I'm that guy.
Your prop bet, does it count screaming goats? Because those are popular.
Ooh,
too.
See, this is why there's a lot of things that go wrong when they have this bet every year. Because, you know, the one who goes over will say, well, that counts as like a syllable. That counts as, you know, a voice. But is it a real word that comes out? Is it talking? So we know that our listeners are going to be paying close attention to the time of the national anthem and talking animal commercials. Let's start to wrap things up. Before we get to our picks, Arthur, a few important dates are coming up for the Chicago Bears. February 16th, they can franchise tag Alshon Jeffrey. They will have 2 weeks to put the tag on him if they want to. I know we've talked about this ad nauseum. My question then for you is, when we go to the combine the next week, February 23rd, we'll be talking to Ryan Pace, who has already given out the franchise tag to Alshon Jeffrey.
I'm going to say no, just because I feel like the early kind of, you know, tone that this new regime has set has been to wait and kind of drag their feet on these things and give every opportunity to think it out, maybe try and get the long-term deal done or whatever. So ultimately I expect him to have the tag, but I think maybe it'll go down to the wire. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. You know, a lot of agent talk happens at the combine, so I can imagine that Ryan Pace will meet with Alshon Jeffrey's representation down there and start to hash things out. So it could happen while we're there, it could happen before, it could happen after. And then if I'm Alshon Jeffrey, I think I sign that.
It's Pace's first time going through this exercise, too. True. There was no one franchise worthy last year, so maybe he wants to kind of do all the due diligence possible.
I think the last franchise tag the Bears handed out was Henry Melton, and he got hurt
the next year. That's right, and early on, right? In the first couple weeks, I think.
But for Jeffrey, we don't know the numbers yet, but you know he made,
we can assume about 14-ish million.
And he made, a half million or a million last year? Yep. It'll be a sizable pay increase, and I just don't think that there's going to be a team that's going to give him the long-term deal he thinks he deserves.
No, well, so, not in lieu, you know, they'd have to trade off a first-round pick in order to do it, right?
If he got the tag, yes.
Right. You know, maybe the one thing working in his favor, and I think we've talked about this on the show, is there's really no good free agent wide receivers, at least not young home run hitters like Alshon. But either way, there's no way someone's spending that type of pick to bring him over.
So February 23rd, we will be in Indianapolis at the Combine. We will try to have a show the week before the Combine. We can recap the Super Bowl, talk about anything that's happened news-wise, preview what we're going to be looking for at the Combine. We will hear from Ryan Pace, John Fox, new Dolphins coach Adam Gase, talk to some of the top prospects down there. And then March 9th, 5 weeks from today, as we are taping, free agency opens. And Arthur, you know what the most important thing about the NFL moving that a little earlier is? Does not conflict with the first round of the NCAA tournament.
There you go.
Us football writers enjoy watching some March Madness and don't enjoy watching March Madness while also having to pay very close attention to what's going on in free agency. So I'm glad they moved that up.
It's a beautiful thing. We will be grinding here in the Crystal Lake offices for that first week, and make sure you're checking out the website. But then you'll get a little bit of a break after all the craziness, and tune into some college basketball craziness.
And I'm going to plug this a few times on the show, but we are right in the middle of putting the finishing touches on our Pro Football Weekly 2016 NFL Draft Preview magazine, written by former Bears Director of College Scouting Greg Gabriel. 200 to 250 scouting reports in there of the best prospects, guys you think the Bears are going to draft, guys you don't want the Bears to draft. He does a fantastic job, detailed scouting reports for somebody who did it for 30 years in the league. So that will be on newsstands later this month. So keep an eye out for that. All right, guys. Yeah, draft back in Chicago. Super Bowl picks. Let's do it. Arthur, I'll start. Actually, no, I won't start with you. I'm going to start with Dan Mott. And it's not that I'm not listening to you when I take my phone out, but I got to go find Hub's pick. Because there are people that only listen to our show to get Hub's pick.
I'm going Carolina 31, Denver 20.
High score.
Did you say Denver?
Yeah, I got
31.
No. Carolina 31. See, he was not listening.
Trying to multitask.
He was not listening.
I heard Denver. I was like, what?
I told you he wasn't paying attention to this.
But he does like a lot of points. That'll be a shootout.
I think I am going to go with Carolina 28, Denver 17.
I'm going to make it a clean trifecta over here. I'm also picking the Panthers. I'm going to say 24-20. I think Cam Newton is going to find a way to do damage with his legs. That's really the biggest kind of neutralizing factor for that Denver defense. And I think that's what's going to kind of burn the Broncos in the long run.
I have 70,000 emails from Hub, so I'm having trouble finding his pick.
This is the guy who gets mad at me because I'm not cleaning out my inbox often.
He picked the Panthers to win. There you go. Spoiler alert. He did pick Carolina to win. I went Carolina 26, Denver 22, because I like those goofy scores. And that number's getting big. I think it's at like 5.5 or 6. I think Denver might find a way to cover.
Yeah. And just so you guys don't think that everyone is going with the Panthers, make sure you check out our insert in Thursday's paper, Chicago Sun-Times, Northwest Herald, Daily Herald. We do have several people picking the Broncos, and I think the consensus is people think it's going to be a lot closer than that line that you alluded to getting bigger and bigger.
And I don't think anybody in this room will be stunned if the Broncos win, because that defense is the exact type of defense that could really cause problems for Cam Newton, as we talked about earlier. But I think when you break it down, the way that Carolina offense can play, and more importantly, the way we just don't have a ton of confidence about Denver's defense is going to lead to it. But really all that matters is how long is Lady Gaga's national anthem going to go? Will it be over or under 220? Stay tuned. That does it for this Super Bowl edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. Be sure to head to our website, chicagofootball.com, all the time, but also throughout this week and this weekend. Hub is down there writing columns, and he will have certainly a story right after the game. Big thank yous to our executive producer, Dan Mott, our associate producer, John Solly, my co-host, Arthur Arkish. I'm Kevin Fishbane. We'll be back post-Super Bowl at some point pre-combine and get back to some more Bears talk. We'll talk to you then soon. Enjoy the Super Bowl.